Oh, I could just listen to that for a while. God, he's got a good voice. Of course, that is Bon Iver, who is a Wisconsin native. Good old Wisconsin boy. It was funny, though, because you listen to that song, and I remember when the Kamala Harris campaign had him perform at one of their rallies, and it was after Megan Thee Stallion had performed in Atlanta, and I just was feeling like, I love Bon Iver. I think he is, I'm very proud that he's from the state. I love his music. But I'm not sure he's necessarily someone who, like, gets the people going.
Absolutely
right?
Not.
Right? So I was like, I mean, it feels like it doesn't really, like, pump up a crowd because you just kind of want to listen and relax and feel something when you listen to his songs. But why are we talking about Bon Iver? So he was on Jimmy Fallon. I think this was Friday night. And this clip is making the rounds on social media. And truly, you know how there's sometimes you just see something like, that is so Wisconsin. The other thing that I saw recently that was so Wisconsin, we had fish fry at Stenny's out in Lake Country in Conemaugh on Friday. And they have high chairs that, like, will fit at a high top situation. And on the back of those high chairs, there is a sign that says, no high chairs at the bar.
Oh, my gosh.
Also very, very, very Wisconsin. Because you can bring, as I know, you can bring babies into bars, but they can't sit at the bar. Anyways, Bon Iver was on Jimmy Fallon on Friday and had this exchange about his neighbor.
They had heard your song on a TV show, Skinny Love, and they just wanted to call, let you know your song was on TV. Listen to this voicemail.
Hey, Justin. Hi, this is Brian, your neighbor. Just thought I'd let you know on The Voice tonight, there's a couple of girls singing Skinny Girl on there. Just thought I'd let you know if you're around. It's on The Voice tonight, Channel 13. Talk to you later. Have a good day. Bye.
Yes! We love you! Brian?
Brian is the best neighbor in the world. And his wife, Mary, immediately texts me. He's like, sorry he got this name of the song wrong. He didn't mean to. Like
Skinny Girl.
Skinny Girl on there. I mean, that's how my accent is when I'm back home or visiting around the campfire with Brian, too. But we love you, Brian.
I just love that he called you up just to let you know that your song was
like, hey,
being sung.
No, you've made something of yourself. You're not just a bunch of musicians running around the yard.
Isn't that great? Yeah. And do you get to see Brian? I mean,
oh, yeah. I mean, we do the, in Wisconsin, we do the one finger wave on the road or, you know, like.
Hey there, neighbor.
Yep.
I saw that. I was just beaming because just you have those neighbors.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely have those neighbors. Oh, you're on the channel. You're on the TV. That thing that you did. So, yeah, I thought that was one Wisconsin in the wild that was certainly worth sharing. The other one that I did not know is White Lotus, obviously, mm-hmm. Very popular show. The season finale of season 3 was last night. Probably, arguably, one of the most popular shows right now. It's hard to gauge that because everything's so decentralized and streaming, and it's harder to capture attention the way they used to. But either way, she had an incredible monologue in the show last night, and I come to find out. So Carrie Coon, in 2006, she graduated from University of Wisconsin.
That's so crazy.
I did not know that she had a Wisconsin tie. So it's the number one streaming show right now, obviously. But she stuck around in Wisconsin after she got her MFA in acting at Madison. And so first she was a member of the Madison's Repertory Theater. And then later she was part of American Players Theater. And then after 4 years of local shows, she moved to Chicago, where she got her big break as Honey at the Steppenwolf Theater. In the production of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. So there you go. Another Wisconsin in the wild tie.
The more you know.
The more you know. And then the final one, which we decided not to clip it, because I don't know if it was fine. But SNL did have Mike Myers playing Elon Musk over the weekend in a cheesehead, making jokes about buying the race versus just buying Wisconsin. So Wisconsin in the wild across multiple popular shows this weekend.
I love it. Add to the month, the bunch.
Yeah, absolutely. Then there was another Wisconsin in the wild in the big tournament. So we'll talk about more about that after this. So wait, Rhea, you said this is part of the March Madness and NC2A tournament?
Yeah, you didn't see the promo for this at all? They have like...
I saw it. I don't think I clocked that this was the song from
Oh, they had like the video of the of music video and then also the March Madness like highlights. It was really cool.
For both the women and men?
I think it was for sure the men.
Okay.
I'm not sure about the women, but I mean, why not?
All right. Well, yesterday, the women's tournament is officially over. UConn is back on top, which also means that former Germantown high school star KK Arnold, who earned the McDonald's High School All-American honors in 2023 and was Wisconsin's State Girls Basketball Player of the Year three times, she is now also an NC2A Women's National Championship ring holder. She can add that to her trophy case. Yes, they UConn handedly beat South Carolina, who were the reigning champs from last year, 82-59. We were watching the game yesterday. Well, mostly because Mike and I, this is our second year in a row doing a head-to-head bracket.
Okay.
And it's the second year that I've won. So take that, Mike. So we were watching the game, and it was not close for most of the game.
Wow.
And so that was, it wasn't as fun to watch as last year's game was, but I was very happy for UConn, very happy for Paige. And Arnold came off the bench to score 9 points in 15 minutes for the Huskies. So she made all three of her shots from the field and hit three of her five three free throws, and she had three assists. So another Wisconsin in the wild. Congratulations to KK. But it was funny because a couple weeks back, so during the Wisconsin girls basketball tournament, we had shared this clip because my mom got all verklempt after the Assumption Royals girls won their division championship. And so we're going to replay a little bit of that conversation of why she got kind of emotional. You got a little emotional over it.
Yes. The story went. I got kind of emotional because we were in the living room. And as you know, Kristen, we get a lot of emergency vehicle traffic that goes by our house because we're close to the hospital. And all of a sudden, I heard all kinds of emergency vehicles, and I had to check out to see what it was. And I looked, and squad cars were coming up, but they were going slow. And I thought, what the heck? And then I saw the bus, the Lamers bus, which was carrying the team of girls. And there were five squad cars bringing in the bus with the state championship girls on it, followed by fire trucks and everything. And it was fun. It was small town America. But so proud because, A, everybody's proud that they won, but I was on the first team of girls at Assumption High that actually went someplace to play. We had a team that got to go to two schools. That was our conference. And we went to Marshfield, Columbus, and what was then Maria in Stevens Point, which was associated with Pacelli. And that was our whole season.
It was two games from against then, two different teams.
Two games out of school. The rest of everything was all within school, kind of intramurals. But that was how it started for us way back.
Would have that been like 68, 69?
No, it was 72.
Oh, God, okay.
1972. 1972, which was when you were juniors, and then senior year we added, I think, a school or two, but I happened to communicate with some of my friends that are still good friends that were on that team, and we laughed because we still remember when we first started learning to play, you had a rover. We laughed because our rover was in the little girls' chat with us. So anyway, it was an exciting day because it made me once again remember how far girls have come in sports and in everything. But right there, it was kind of so visible that the Assumption High girls really had come a long way since I was there. And it made me very proud.
So that was my mom, Debbie Bry. And to add, the reason why I'm bringing this up again, even though that was 3 weeks ago, so they're moving. And they're going through, as you do after you've been in a house for 15 plus years, going through stuff, finding stuff. And my mom found her yearbook from, must have been 72. And she took pictures and sent this to us yesterday of the page in the yearbook of that was talking about girls' sports. And you turn, it's a, you know, the centerfold page, or there's two pages for it, and there's black and white photos of different, there's volleyball, there's track, and then there's the basketball team. And the headline on top is, "Women's Lib Come to Organize Sports."
My gosh.
So you think about what was happening in the world at that time.
Right.
And just labeling it Women's Lib Coming to Organize Sports. We're giving the girls a chance. But what I love even more is there's a photo of them in their terrible like pennies that they just get matching shorts and a t-shirt, and then they have like things that they have to pin over themselves for their numbers.
Oh my God.
And you know, so one of the girls who's trying to shoot a layup, I don't think that's my mom. Nope, that's some woman named Carla Schulberg. She's wearing Converse and high socks. But on the caption underneath her photo, it says, "This is the yearbook. Even girls make a basket once in a while."
Oh my, jeez. It's come a long way.
We've come a long way. But then my mom was called out for, because like she said, so there was the Rover. So there was some girls who only played offense, some girls who only played defense, and then one girl on each team who got to cross the half court line. So apparently my mom played offense. And so in the little write up for the, in its first year of organized program in basketball, the AHS, Royal Girls compiled a respectable 6-4 record. Deb Matthews controlled the baseline in many games with both consistent scoring and rebounding. It says she scored, she averaged 10 points and 2 rebounds a game. It's so
way to go, Debbie.
Way to go, Debbie. I think that's higher than I averaged when I was high school.
Yeah, I couldn't have. Not for me.
But yeah, I just thought that was, it does not seek to, like, it just doesn't stop amazing me as far as how far we've come with women's sports within my mom's life, within my lifetime to a certain extent, but certainly within her lifetime as far as how big of a deal it was to have a girls' basketball team and the fact that they got to play two other schools. And they maybe made a basket every once in a while, but a lot of them couldn't run up and down the court, apparently.
And they still been the champions. Wow.
Yeah. So that was really cool. So I was, it's very fun to watch women's sports be, right now, for me, for having a daughter, for growing up playing sports, and now also for my mom to watch some of these things. So I thought I would share that story because it was very fun. But I'll post these pictures, so people can get the full glory of all of them. But when we come back, last week was actually Living Donor Day, and in Wisconsin, we're really lucky to have UW Health, which is one of the nation's largest living donor programs. So we're going to have a story from them after ABC News and local headlines. Welcome back to Spanning the State. I'm Kristen Bry, and last week was Living Donor Day. And here in Wisconsin, we are very lucky to have UW Health, which is one of the nation's largest living donor programs, where they have for kidney and liver donors and recipients. So around Christmas, I think it was around Christmas, that we shared the story of a sister who was a living donor to her sister. But how about the story of a father being a match with his adopted baby girl? So joining us on the phone now is that dad, Sean Isles, and the surgeon, his daughter's surgeon, who completed the transplant, Dr. Katrin Furuya. Welcome to the show to both of you.
Hi.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Hi. So, Sean, tell us about your daughter, Ellie, and when did you and your husband first adopt her?
So we adopted her back in November of 2023. We were selected by a birth mom. She actually wasn't due until December, but came 5 weeks early. So we trekked over to Michigan and got to meet her on day two.
And so you had her for, so she was obviously, she was a preemie, but when did you start realizing that there was something happening and kind of realizing that maybe there was more, like you needed to see a doctor?
Yeah, so we sort of noticed her eyes were yellowish from birth, but her numbers were normal. So in April or end of March 2024, we took her just for her 4-month appointment, and her nurse practitioner noticed that her liver was hard and larger than normal. So had us rush over to the emergency room at UW in Madison, and that's where we met Dr. Furuya and started the whole process that we went through for transplant.
And so, Doctor, can you tell us more about what Ellie's diagnosis was?
Actually, first, could I just say I'm not her transplant surgeon?
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. I'm her transplant hepatologist, so the medical part of things.
Got
it. As opposed to the surgical part. Ellie had something called biliary atresia, which is a disease that's only seen in infants. So adults can't get it. And the diagnosis is usually made shortly after birth. We like to make that diagnosis within the first 2 months of age. Ellie was a bit late when she was diagnosed, but biliary atresia is a disease in which there's a progressive inflammatory scarring that occurs with the bile ducts inside and outside the liver. So eventually the bile that's made in the liver can't go from the liver into the intestinal tract where bile normally helps you digest your food. And biliary atresia is the most common cause for liver transplant in children.
Oh, wow. So is it something that you're just born? Is it a birth defect? Or what is the likelihood of a child having it?
It's not that common. It's okay. Not really a birth defect. Part of the it's not a genetic disorder in that you have identical twins who can be born and only one of them will have it. But we really don't know to date, even though there's a lot of research that's been done on it, we still don't know to date what the cause of biliary atresia is.
Interesting. So Ellie was put on a donors list, but the family started getting tested. Now, Sean, did you have any idea? Did you think that there was a chance that you would be a match?
I really didn't. I mean, the only thing that started the process that led me or allowed me to go forward with the process was that me and Ellie were a blood match. My husband was not, so he actually could not move forward. But just considering my size and her size at the time, she was such a little peanut during this whole process and malnourished. I don't think in my mind I thought I would ever be a match for her.
Well, and that, Doctor, how common is that? It doesn't matter on size as far as when you're looking for like organ matches. What are you looking for when someone becomes an organ donor and what they need to be able to be a match?
Well, blood type is the first thing. And the second thing is the size. So fortunately, in infants, we can wait for a deceased donor and look for a whole organ. But it's very difficult to have an organ that becomes available in that size group. And in fact, the highest waiting list mortality is children under a year of age compared to all others. But fortunately, we can use part of a liver. So that's why living donor donation works. Living liver donation works in for children because we can use part of an adult liver. Typically, we use the left lateral segment of the liver, and that gets transplanted. Oftentimes, it's a parent donating to their child, their infant child. And usually, if we use the left lateral segment, oftentimes that will fit.
So obviously, there's this happy ending to this story, and everyone is healthy and happy. But Sean, how did recovery go for you?
You know, in all honesty, it was not too bad. I had never had a major surgery in my life, so I think that was the hardest part. I really wanted to be with Ellie. She was in the PICU at UW for a few weeks, so trying to motivate myself to get up and start walking to get there was a big motivator. The hardest part was the weight restriction, so I wasn't able to pick her up at the time, and that part was hard. But overall, I would say, I mean, we're 7-8 months in now, and I would say I'm 100% recovered. So it wasn't too bad.
And how was Ellie's recovery, Doctor?
Oh, Ellie is doing fabulous. Her growth and development really picked up once she had her transplant. And I'm predicting right now she's walking with one finger because I've seen her holding on by one finger, but I anticipate when she comes back to see me in clinic, she'll be walking under her own steam.
Would you agree with that, Sean? Is she just about to start running around on her own?
Oh my gosh, she could do it right now. I think she's just trying to keep us all on our toes. So she took one little step this weekend and we both gasped, but she's totally there. She could totally do it if she wanted to.
Well, careful what you wish for. I have a 1.5-year-old and she is hard to contain. So once they start going, they're not going to stop. Well, this is such an incredible story, and so happy that it has such a happy ending. And like I said, we're so lucky to have UW Health right here doing the incredible work that they're doing with living donations. And so thank you both for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. That Dr. Katrin Furuya is a pediatric I'm having a hard time saying words. She works at UW Health Kids, and Sean Isles is the father who just donated part of his liver to his daughter Ellie. So we'll be back with more after this. All I want to do is drink beer for breakfast. Indeed, it is National Beer Day. I feel like there's a lot of these. I feel like there's International Beer Day, and then there's a bunch of cheese days too that we have to like claim all of them. But this one is celebrated every April 7th, and it commemorates the exact day in 1933 when people could legally buy, sell, and drink, emphasis on legally, beer after 13 years of prohibition.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy to think about? Just the 13 years of, when you think about how much we, as a country, we drink now, and how normal it is, and how you feel like the odd one out, especially in this state, if you're not drinking.
Right.
And for over a decade, it was, you had to do it in private, in secret. But yeah.
I had to speak easy.
So yeah, although President Franklin D. Roosevelt officially signed the Cullen-Harrison Act into law on March 22nd, it didn't actually take effect until April 7th. And I guess after signing the history-reversing legislation, Roosevelt famously quipped, quote, "I think this would be a good time for a beer." And then Americans stood united in bars coast to coast, consuming 1.5 million barrels of beer that day. How many pools is that? Put it in Olympic pool size. How many Olympic pools does 1.5 million barrels of beer fill? I'm looking at you like you would know off the top of your head, right?
I'm the last person to ask.
But yeah, and so there you go. So a history tie for your beer today, although it is Monday, and so maybe not the best day for a beer.
I mean, you always start the week off strong. It snowed this morning.
It did snow. Is that your excuse? Is that your litmus test for, am I going to drink today? I was like, well, the weather's bad.
Yeah, doom and gloom. Just like sit inside and just do it. What's your favorite beer, actually?
And I'm an IPA girl.
Really?
Does that surprise you?
A little bit. So yeah, that's kind
of bourbon and IPA. I killed a lot of my taste buds being with my cigarette and coffee diet when I was in my early 20s, and so I like things that have very strong flavors.
Goodness. IPA, which one?
The Carbon 4, the one with the crazy cat on it.
Oh, you told me about this one before. Yeah, I've never had
it. Zombie Dust is really good. What am I? I'm totally blanking on the name. It was with the cat riding the unicorn.
Yeah, I've never, you told me, and I was like, I have never seen it in my lifetime.
I'm blanking on it. I'm going to look it up. I'll come back and report what it is.
Simple, High Life.
High Life. Oh, High Life. Yeah, High Life's great.
Yeah. Champion of beers.
Yeah. Classic. All right. When we come back, I'll tell you what the name of the beer is that I can't think of, and we'll say goodbye. I believe it's time for me to fly. Fantasy Factory Carbon 4. I don't know why I glitched out on that. Great can. One of the best beer cans I've ever seen.
I mean, a cat and a unicorn.
It's a cat riding a unicorn. The cat has like a bandana on and has like a motion of like charge. The standing cat on its hind legs. He's not riding it. And it's like, it's just a psychedelic free-for-all.
Does it taste psychedelic?
No, it tastes like an IPA. Wow. It's great.
I would love to know the backstory behind that.
I'm sure they weren't sober when they came up with it. That's my betting on that. The other answer from the 708, 1.5 million barrels of beer is equivalent to a little over 70 Olympic-sized swimming pools.
Jesus, that's
a lot.
Now,
I did not fact-check that, but I'm going to take their word for it.
Yeah, me too. That's a lot.
That's a lot. It's a lot of beer. Especially, I'm trying to think of what the population would have been back then. Less than it is now.
Absolutely. They were just chugging it back.
Secretly. Celebration. and then was there one more? Oh, and then we had Judith, said that she was for the girls' sports, she was on the first girls' track team at Pulaski.
So, aww. Yeah,
that's very cool, Judith.
Did you run track?
No.
Really?
Mike ran track.
Mike's very fast. Long legs?
No. I'm not. I mean, I think I was like, I'm not slow.
Yeah.
But I wasn't fast.
Like, if you had to do like a foot race now, do you think you'd win?
I can't even. No. No. Especially since having a baby. If you know, you know. I'm not a runner anymore.
Oh, man.
My foot race, no.
Oh, man.
Maybe, I mean, I don't. Maybe against like you and Brandon.
I think I would.
I'd smoke you.
Oh, Brandon. City smokers.
So yeah, I would. I could probably beat Brandon in horse, though. I would guarantee I can beat him in horse. I can. Besides Ben Brust, most people yeah. at the Milwaukee Good Karma Brands, I would say that I could probably beat in horse.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, I'm gonna throw that out there. Maybe this summer at Summerfest we can do it. All right. Well, coming up next, of course, is Wisconsin's afternoon news. Julia Fellow is back. We will be back tomorrow. We have a very full show. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. We have Giving Tuesday. So we're going to be talking to a student who is organizing. It's not quite a food drive, but she is making sure students don't go hungry at University of Wisconsin Eau Claire. So I can't wait to talk about that. And then actually my brother's teammate from UWM, so go Panthers, is starting a new fund to try to compete when it comes to the portal. So the UW Milwaukee men's Panthers can be competitive as we continue to navigate this new world of name, image, likeness, and all of the college sports. although Wisconsin Badgers, I think, got a big trade this weekend. So we'll learn more about that. But yeah, so tomorrow's show will be another full of fun. Maybe there'll be more beer references. I don't know. But stay tuned. Wisconsin's afternoon news is next.